Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. One Love Foundation is a national nonprofit organization with the goal of ending relationship abuse. The foundation empowers young people with the tools and resources they need to see the signs of healthy and unhealthy relationships. A welcome to Katie Hood, CEO of the One Love Foundation. Under her leadership, the organization has become the nation's leading educator of young people on the topic of healthy and unhealthy relationships. One Love's award-winning film-based peer-to-peer educational workshop has reached more than 1.5 million young people in person, and over 100 million have engaged with the One Love educational campaigns online. Prior to joining One Love, Katie was the chief executive officer at the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research. Katie, welcome to 411 Teen. I am delighted to have you and talk with you about your organization.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Great, great. Well, what is One Love Foundation for our listening audience? Tell us about it.
One Love was started in 2010 after a young woman named Yardley Love was killed at the University of Virginia. She was a senior, about weeks from graduation. She was a member of the women's lacrosse team. She was looking forward to life, starting a life in New York after graduation, when she was killed by her ex-boyfriend, who was another University of Virginia student, also a lacrosse player. It was shocking. A lot of people will tell me they remember where they were when they heard about this. It just sort of defies your expectations of who is affected by the issue of relationship abuse. And yet, in some ways, it's a real clarifier, because the truth is we all are affected by relationship abuse. What was interesting is I was a friend of the family. So when I was home on maternity leave. I just had a baby the week before, and I got a call saying, you need to get to Sharon's house because her cousin's been killed. And Sharon was my closest friend in my town in New York. And I jumped in the car and I drove down the hill, and I knew she had a cousin in college who was a lacrosse player, because Sharon had been a lacrosse player and she was living vicariously through her senior season. So I thought maybe it was an injury on the field, or maybe it was a car accident, or it could be anything, right? Yeah. But when I walked in the front door and Sharon was sitting in her foyer with her three small kids around her, and she mouthed the words to me, you know, he broke down the door and he beat her to death. I can honestly say, well, I know the only thing that came out of my mouth for about a minute was what? Mm-hmm. It didn't make sense. And it didn't make sense to her family either. Literally, I think when we see these stories in the news, we think, oh, I would have known. I would know if somebody was at risk, or I would know what to do. But they were shocked. They had no idea she was in an unhealthy or dangerous or abusive relationship. They knew that she had just broken up with a guy that she was glad to be breaking up from. She was looking forward to moving to a new city. But in a million years, they never would have known that this outcome was possible. And so I think as they started to realize that if a domestic violence expert had been dropped in the middle of their friend group, that they would have known this was an unhealthy and increasingly dangerous situation, and they would have known what to do. And her family really realized that we want every kid to understand what the signs of an unhealthy relationship are, and to know how to talk about them, and to know what to do if you have concerns. And so that's what One Love exists to do today.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what unhealthy really looks like. Because here we have a family who didn't know. You know, it caught them off guard. They had no idea. And as you say, if we equip people with the tools that are necessary and give them the skills, that certainly will help them to identify unhealthy relationships.
Yeah. And I think when I started this work, well, so I ended up joining full time as the first CEO 4 years after they started the foundation, mm-hmm. when they created a film to teach young people. Yardley's mom, Sharon, just had this instant vision that One Love should talk to young people in a language they could hear. That wasn't PowerPoints and lectures. Mm-hmm. That was film. That was peer-to-peer discussion. And it's fictional film. It wasn't a documentary about Yardley's life. It's fictional stories that show young people how this plays out. And the truth is, I think we're also trying to counter, everybody knows that physical abuse is no good, but we're a lot more, we call emotional abuse different things. We call it drama or toxic or whatever. Mm-hmm. We don't always treat it with the seriousness that we need to. And emotional abuse is actually more damaging from a PTSD perspective than physical violence. So there was this whole, we had this realization that we really needed to really focus on teaching about emotionally unhealthy behaviors that can become abuse over time. So I would say that we've developed the 10 signs of an unhealthy relationship. That was one of the first things we did. We worked with experts at BU and at Johns Hopkins to develop the films and the discussion guides, but then putting specific words to things that I think young people, all of us, code as emotion. We know when we're sad or upset, but we don't often say why. And sometimes it's because we're with somebody who's really volatile and things can be going super well. And for the littlest, slightest thing, suddenly there's like a, you know, slamming down your cell phone or, you know, stomping out of the house and slamming the door. And we don't really know why that happened. And there's excuses made after, or forgiveness is asked for after, but the volatility doesn't necessarily go away. And that's actually visible quite early in a relationship. And it should be one of the signs we teach our young people to look for and not just excuse, but hold people accountable for. I would say another one that is really frequently misunderstood is isolation. An abusive relationship often starts out as a really exciting and thrilling one. This person can, you know, bowl you over with statements of affection and love. And I'm so grateful I found you. And I've been looking for you for so long. And it makes you feel good. Mm-hmm. It's what we think we've been looking for our whole lives. Right. And then they want to spend all their time with you. And that's actually in the beginning of a relationship, that can be a really normal and fine part of a relationship, is wanting to spend a lot of time together. But we try to teach young people to trust their guts and be listening. If somebody wants you with them all the time, when you'd actually rather be with your friends or playing your sport or being with your family, rather than just complying to make it easier, you need to start articulating that, because you don't want to miss the unhealthy sign of isolation, which is when a controlling partner tries to tether you to them and take you away from the people and the connections that you loved before. Because isolation is a way that they gain control. And in unhealthy relationships and abusive relationships, frequently the goal is control. Isolation can also show up as someone who is very critical of your friends or your family, someone who says, oh, they just want us to fail, or they're totally against us, sowing these seeds of doubt that can make a person want to push away those who truly love them the most. So I'd say those are some of the signs. There's others as well. Belittling. It's in many relationships that we're all in, there's like a teasing or bantering element of it, right? And that's fun. But sometimes your feelings are hurt. And if you either feel like you can't speak up about it, or you feel like when you do speak up, the response is, oh, lighten up. Why do you take everything so seriously? You need to pay attention. That's not the response you'd want in a healthy relationship. But our 10 signs, just to list them, are, you know, intensity, jealousy. And I should say, you know, jealousy is a normal part of relationships. It's how someone deals with it and how intense it is. Manipulation, isolation, sabotage, belittling, guilting, volatility, betrayal, and deflecting responsibility, which is not taking ownership for the things that you do in a relationship, but constantly blaming your partner. Well, I got mad at you because you did this. Mm-hmm. And I think what the amazing thing about these 10 signs is, and we did not know this at first, but as soon as we started anchoring all our teaching to the 10 signs, young people would bring up examples in their own lives of where they're seeing these things. And they've never really understood what to call it before. And frequently they will say, it's not just in their dating relationships. It's in their friendships. It's in their family relationships. It's in their work relationships. And so really we view these 10 signs as a real anchor framework for people in understanding the very most important thing in their lives, which is their relationships.
Now, are these 10 signs the same online when you have an online relationship that turns abusive and, you know, in youth? How do they differ?
No, it's the same signs. Okay. All that I think online does is it opens up a new channel for these to come out.
Okay.
So, for example, you know, jealousy or intense jealousy. You know, this can be somebody stalking your social profiles and watching which photos do you like. Like, why are you following that person? Why have you looked at, why have you liked all of their pictures? I don't want you following them. Like, there's a new avenue for them to exert control over, so to speak. It can involve betrayal. You know, this topic comes up a lot with young people in terms of sharing intimate pictures. Online now is a vehicle where those aren't just shared with a friend, they can be broadcast. And, you know, that is a terrible thing. So these behaviors, the online world is just a new place for them to play out.
Well, one thing about online is it seems to be so pernicious. And what is it that makes it that way? Just simply the way that it is manifested?
I think there's... I've thought about this question a lot. And I've actually read a couple of articles about it. I mean, I think, first of all, I think in general, as our world gets more like media connected and digitally connected, we get a little bit more anonymous. And the consequences for what we do online, it's just to this like amorphous online world versus necessarily to your neighbor next door. I saw a study once that Pew did that said that, you know, more than 40% of Americans have experienced online abuse and more than 60% have witnessed it. And these are massive numbers. So I think in general, the online forum takes us away from face-to-face relationship building to a certain extent. And it also, the consequences are, it just feels more anonymous and the consequences are harder to nail down.
Okay. All right. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a conversational forum for teens and families and other interested folks. This hour, I'm talking with Katie Hood, CEO at One Love Foundation. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, where you get the 411 on today's life issues and events. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me via the Zoom platform is Katie Hood with One Love Foundation. Katie, as we talk about, you know, abuse, how widespread is the problem of relationship abuse?
Well, it's incredibly widespread. And I would go as far as to say that relationship abuse is a public health epidemic. When Yardley was killed, part of the reason I had no place to put this is because I didn't think about this as widespread an issue as it is. Mm-hmm. But when we started looking at the stats afterwards, more than one in three women, nearly one in three men, and one in two transgender or non-binary folks will be in an abusive relationship in their lifetime. That makes us truly like an all of us issue. If we haven't been in an abusive relationship, someone we know has. And so, but really, I think it's an issue that thrives in the dark. It thrives in a denial that this is my problem. This could never happen to me. I think it so threatens our sense of safety and security to think that somebody that we love could hurt us, that we prefer to think this happens to other people. But the truth is, it's all of us. And we all have a stake in seeing those stats change.
And I think you really have answered this, but to throw it out there, what are the demographics of the abuser? What influence, if any, does one's milieu, our culture, environment, have on abuse and how we deal with it?
I have statistics on the incidence of the more than one in three women, nearly one in three men, and one in two transgender or non-binary folks will be in an abusive relationship. We know that 40% of Black women and 56% of Indigenous women will be in an abusive relationship. So there are populations where the rates are higher. And those are populations, you know, equally deserving of support and attention, but that sometimes don't get all the support and attention that they need when these crimes happen. In terms of abusers, I mean, abusers are the range of people as well. Mm-hmm. Growing up in an abusive home might affect your propensity, your learned behavior about how you deal with stress or your genetics around how controlling you need to be. We also know that you don't have to be raised in abuse to become an abuser, nor do you have to be raised in an abusive family to become a victim. So I think that we do know that there's factors in life, you know, adverse childhood experiences that can contribute to poor outcomes for young people, including abuse being an outcome and becoming a victim of abuse or becoming an abuser. We also know that the adverse childhood experiences, if we can teach kids how to have healthier relationships and improve their quality of their relationships, that can be a bit of an antidote for some of what they experienced as kids. So the way that we think about the issue is it's an all of us issue, even though some groups of people are at higher risk. And we also wonder, will this work not only help alleviate the issue of abuse, but could it help with other downstream issues that come out of trauma and come out of challenges in early life? And we don't know whether that's addiction or homelessness or all the other mm-hmm. issues, but we do know that the health of our relationships is fundamentally linked to our outcomes in life. And that we believe that this is an area every kid deserves some education in.
Well, are there signals or indicators that one may observe in their friends who may be being abused indeed? May not be talking about it, okay? It may not be physical abuse, because we're not always talking about physical abuse. She mentioned earlier that emotional abuse, that psychological abuse, can be very devastating. But what about those friends around them who notice that, Janice is acting a little strange, or I don't know what's going on with Janice. Are there signals that you would say they might want to watch out for?
Yeah, I mean, I think the number one signal that resonated with me personally when I got involved in this work is when your friend withdraws, when they're in a relationship and they withdraw and they're spending all of their time with their new partner and they're not doing mm-hmm. the activities they used to like to do. And over time, they become a little bit more subdued and not wanting to answer a lot of questions about the relationship. That to me is a warning sign. I think in my younger years, I would think a friend like that was just choosing her partner over her friends, right? But that mm-hmm. When that happens, maybe that's the case. But just as often, that person may be being guilted into spending all their time with this person and dropping the things that they previously loved. So I think that's a sign. If you see a friend who becomes sort of increasingly withdrawn from their former self, that's something to be worried about. You can expect, if you raise this with a friend and you say, I'm worried about you. You know, are you in an abusive relationship? You can expect that denial will be the automatic thing that happens. No, you're overreacting. This is not at all what's happening. It's really important and this is a mistake I made many times. I say, I don't like your boyfriend or girlfriend. I don't think they're right for you. Mm-hmm. Guess what? They don't want to hear from you on that level. You know, at this point, if it is an unhealthy or abusive relationship, it's really important that you as a friend understand it's not as simple as telling them what to do or telling them to drop that person. There's love here. It's just very unhealthy love. And your goal as a friend should be to keep the lines of communication open and to say, I'm here for you no matter what, and not to criticize the specific person, but instead show empathy towards some of the behaviors you might be seeing. Like, for example, you're out with your friends and you feel like there's some joking and bantering going on between, you know, your friend's partner and her, but it takes an edge, and you see in your friend's eyes, it took an edge and she didn't say anything. That's an opportunity to go open the door and be like, that would have made me feel exactly. really bad. Are mm-hmm. you okay? Mm-hmm. And instead of focusing on what a jerk that person is, which will never be heard right. Because if it is an abusive relationship, that partner has spent time in telling the person that they're controlling or abusing, your friends are all against me. So when you come in and say, that person stinks, they're like, oh, this is exactly what he or she said you would do. Uh-huh. So instead, really focus on the behavior, focus on showing empathy and love and caring and concern. If it really is an abusive relationship, the data shows that on average, it takes a person 7 times to leave an abusive relationship. So this can be a long road for a friend. It is very, very hard to watch somebody that you feel like is in an abusive relationship and not know what to do except keep lines of communication open. But there's nothing more important, because one of the goals of an abusive person, as I said earlier, is to tether you totally to them and to no one else. And if you let the lines of communication go down, that's a significant resource that your friend needs that's no longer there.
Where or how does one access One Love Foundation? And what's your email? What's your web address? Would you share that with the listening audience at this point?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So One Love has programs for schools. We've done educational programs in all 50 states and around the world. All of our materials and all information about us is at joinonelove.org. All words, joinonelove.org. We are committed. We build tools that anyone anywhere can learn to use. So for example, all of our films and our workshops are accessible. You just have to create a login, go through some training, and then you can bring our programs to the young people you love. Or if you're a young person yourself, we empower you to start these conversations with your friends. Florida is actually, I know you're based in Florida, is one of the states where we've educated the most people in this country through great partnerships with the Duval County Public Schools, but also with Broward County and Palm Beach and some others. So we love the work that we've done there. But in addition to the educational work, we have teen ambassador and student leadership programs that are outstanding. So if you're a young person who's interested in getting involved as a leader, joinonelove.org will have more information on how you can do that.
Now, is there a cost? Because you provide workshops, you provide online training for youth and parents and educators. Is there a cost to this? I mean, what is the process for those listening who may really want to become more involved?
So there is no cost. My donors would say it's philanthropically funded. So we raise money to enable us to provide this to anyone, anywhere for free. This was something that Yardley's family felt really strongly about early on. They never wanted a young person or a teacher to be unable to access these tools and start these conversations because of resources. And we're really committed to making these tools freely available. And I think that's been a big reason why we've grown. I mean, we've educated 1.8 million kids around the country since we started our program, and that's even through the pandemic. But a lot of that is because there isn't a charge for this. And the sad thing is we haven't properly valued in our society the importance of this education
exactly.
to date. So there's not school budget designed for this. So what our goal is let's make tools, let's make the best tools that really speak to young people, films they want to engage with, you know, models they want to engage with, and let's train people around them, whether that be staff at a Boys and Girls Club or somebody at a middle school or, you know, whoever it is, let's train them to use these tools to start conversations with the kids they care about. In nearly every case, when a tragedy happens, like Yardley's, in retrospect, people are like, oh, wait, maybe there were signs. We want to like move that conversation up. It's really critical that this whole front line of people surrounding our young people, their friends, their teachers, their coaches, their families, really know these signs and can lead more productive and informed conversations that they can help before it becomes the worst possible outcome.
Well, abusive relationships often repeat themselves. I mean, it may be a different face, but the same behavior or the same madness. Would you talk about the patterns seen in these types of relationships? Because I have seen, you know, that it just seems to be you move from one abuser to another abuser. And that's why I was saying, yeah, the face may change, but the behavior and the dynamics remain the same. And often the abusee doesn't quite see that. And so it becomes a pattern for them. And they continue in an abusive relationship. Would you, first of all, would you agree with that? Maybe I'm just seeing it. Or where do you sit on that?
No, that's true. You're absolutely right. The stats show that once you've been in an abusive relationship, you are more likely to be in a second and a third and a fourth abusive relationship. And so I think that, and then there's on the abuser side of things, I can't tell you the number of people who have survived abusive relationships who've said to me, it only really, because breakup, this is really important to say, mm-hmm. the point of breakup is the most dangerous part of point in a relationship. Yes. Getting, and I think part of the reason when people say, why do they stay? Frequently they stay because they're afraid of the consequences of breaking this pattern of control, right? So it's really, you need to have the understanding of how hard it is, how dangerous it is. Many of the women that I've talked to, and I've talked to men as well who've been in abusive relationships, but I'm thinking of the women I've talked to who've now gotten to the other side. And what they will say is the tormenting didn't end even after breakup until their abusive partner found somebody else to be in an abusive relationship mm-hmm. with. So these patterns continue on both sides of the equation. What I remember talking to a woman who realized she'd been in an abusive relationship when she was 20. She got divorced, but then she ended up in another abusive mm-hmm. relationship 6 or 7 years later. And then, you know, years later, another. And then I was talking to her and she was a little over 40. And she said, you know, I just find healthy relationships boring. And that's such, and she was like, not happy with herself that she was saying that. But I think there is a charge running through an unhealthy relationship. There is this push-pull. Mm-hmm. The controlling person likes to shove you away as hard as they can, whether that's doing these things to you, belittling you, calling you stupid. You're lucky I'm with you. Nobody else uh-huh. would choose to be with you. You're stupid. You're ugly. You're this, you're that. And then pulling them back together with I'd be nothing without you. You're the only right. person who understands me. It's because of everything that happened to me as a kid that I'm this way now. What would I do with it? I'd kill myself if you left me. And that brings the person, the person who's being abused. The biggest misconception is people always say, these must be people with low self-esteem. And if I've come to believe anything over the years through my work with countless survivors, no, they're actually just helpers. They actually care uh-huh. about this person and they want to help them. But too frequently, they value helping them more than they value or understand the need to help themselves. And so I think they do this pattern of getting used to these volatility spikes becomes your normal. So it's one of the ways that when you're being pulled close by an abusive partner and worshiped and apologized and this will never happen again, it's like a high. You feel so loved and cared for. So you are drawn back to it. And then when the pattern repeats itself, you're seeking that restoration again. So I do think there is there's a push-pull cycle that you can become very addicted to. I also think there's no doubt you don't have to have low self-esteem to end up in your first abusive relationship, but being in an emotionally abusive relationship or a physical, it does destroy your self-esteem. I mean, mm-hmm. it is mm-hmm. this process of being gaslit is a term that we more frequently are hearing these days, but constantly being torn down. And that is a strategy that the abuser will use to keep you close to them, right? Like if you believe you're worth nothing, then why would you venture away from them? Right. So you can end up coming out of an abusive relationship with pretty low self-esteem. And I don't think that helps you avoid a next abusive relationship.
And you touched on this, but the pattern is very powerful when you have the apology and the excuse and the I'm sorry. And they feel like, oh, wow, okay, everything is going to be all right. I mean, we'll excuse it, that whole nightingale syndrome. And then it just turns into madness all over again. You know, the flowers, the flowers, the candy, and then the slap.
Well, we all want it to be like it was in the beginning, mm-hmm, right? You got to remember mm-hmm. these relationships in the beginning, you think, this is what I've been waiting for. I've been whisked off my feet. You know, I'm being worshipped. This is amazing. And we want to believe that that remembrance of what it was can make us hold on to something a lot longer than we should. And, you know, the number one question I get from people who are in these relationships, or even people just learning about, you know, that we teach at One Love for the first time, is, do you think abusive people can change? And, you know, the answer is not without a lot of work. I think that these behaviors become really ingrained, and without really a lot of thoughtful, intentional therapy work, I think it's very hard for them to change. And I think, you know, the tough love message is probably not. And very often part of the apology period is a promising to change as well. And unfortunately, more stories than that, that doesn't ever really happen.
You know, and it's also, and you touched on this, but the abuse can sometimes be mistaken for intense feelings of care and of concern. Sometimes the abusee feels flattered to think of that the person loves them so deeply. They're so insanely jealous, you know, and maybe when their friend confronts them, maybe they're just jealous of what she, you know, may have or he may have, because she's so lucky to have someone who cares so deeply about her. Okay, that extreme jealousy and those controlling behaviors are not signs of affection at all. But, you know, they see them, they interpret them as sincere and deep, deep love and affection. So I wanted to throw that in because I think so you see that so much when you're dealing with individuals who are in abusive situations. I'm going to ask
100%. And I want to only one
let
thing
me ask
rather.
You. Let me ask you just to hold your thoughts. Hold your thoughts for one moment. We're going to come back. You're tuned into 411 Teen. I am talking with Katie Hood, CEO of One Love Foundation.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and I have been talking with Katie Hood, CEO of One Love Foundation. Katie, I had to interrupt you, and I'd like to have you share your thoughts. Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Well, you were making the accurate point that these intense feelings or these intense relationships, it can be thought, well, this person cares about me so much, mm-hmm. or they love me so much, which is what all of us human beings want, right? Is to be loved and cared for.
That's right.
But the role that friends play, and this is one of the things we teach at One Love to the kids we educate, is friends contribute to that. And especially in this digital world. So when you post pictures, and it's like, you know, of you and your, first of all, everybody knows that on social media, you post your highlight reel. So it's all the good moments. It's all the, you know, oh, how mm-hmm. cute are you eating Chinese food together? How mm-hmm. cute are you at the on the Ferris wheel or at the mm-hmm. beach or whatever it is? And how do your friends respond? Hashtag relationship goals, fire, 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 love, love, love. So, right. So we don't actually know, and we have a whole film called Behind the Post, which is intended to raise the point that real life happens behind the post. So that image, and actually we have heard from people that when they get ready to break up with someone, because they realize that behind the post, it's not so great, they end up going back and scrolling through their social media, which is where they have documented their relationship, but they haven't documented the fights or the screaming or the belittling. They've only documented the highlights, and their friends validate so much. So one of the things we try to teach the young people that we work with is, your job as a friend is to just keep asking. When your friend's dating somebody, don't draw assumptions by what they post on social media. Ask them questions. How's it going? What mm-hmm. do you guys like to do together? Mm-hmm. You know, is he close with his family? Or is she close with her family? Like, where'd she grow? You know, don't make assumptions about, oh, you're so lucky, he loves you so much, because that can help keep somebody in a relationship longer, because it's social reinforcement for what might actually behind the post be a bad thing.
Exactly. And another point I want to emphasize is abuse is a family dysfunction. And it's a family dysfunction that I would say repeats itself through generations. The abused, often they may leave their family for a family of choice, and then they repeat that whole abusive cycle from the other side. And the abused may become the abuser. And so the continuous cycle goes on and on and on.
Yeah, and it's true. That's exactly, that can be very true. And it's like the saddest truth, isn't it? But it is part of our humanity, and we need to own up to that. But I do believe, so I think about the work One Love does. And by the way, this is the shot on goal towards solving this, that this family has decided to take and this organization is trying to build. It's risky. Yeah. But the basic idea is, if we get in front of this issue, if we teach middle schoolers and high schoolers the signs of healthy and or unhealthy and healthy behaviors, by the way, which after we teach about unhealthy, that two questions young people have every time. The first is, how do I help a friend? Yes. Our programs help them realize they know somebody who needs help. And the second is, what does healthy look like? Because many of them do not have healthy models in their lives. Uh-huh. So this important, if the bet we're taking is, if we really create a standardized way for kids to learn about healthy and unhealthy relationships so that they have a language to describe why they feel the way they feel, and that they have a vision that they can, healthy as possible, but they have to work at it. Can this generation that we're working with in turn develop healthier adult partnerships and be healthier parents and then have kids that are raised with less abuse in the family? Like, what is exactly the generational impact of this work? I don't want to be arrogant and assume that one program or approach can do it all, but I do think there could be a ripple effect to this. I've seen in my own family, I did not grow up in an abusive family. I did grow up in a family that had one of our healthy signs is healthy conflict. We had a lot of unhealthy conflict in my family, and I still struggle with it today, being healthy in my conflict. This work helps me. It helps me in conflict with my husband. It helps me in conflict with my kids. So I do think this stuff is learnable. And the idea that you create a generation that's better able to parent and raise a healthier generation and then keep doing this work and help, that you can break the cycle, truly, that's what we're all going for. And that would be an amazing blessing if we could get there.
Yeah. That's true. And I know you shared this, but would you, again, take the time to share your contact information for your organization?
Yes. So our website is joinonelove.org. If you want to reach out by email, you can reach out to info@joinonelove.org.
Let's talk a little bit about schools before we close, because young folks spend more time at school than almost any other place. And do you have any insights, any suggestions, resources? And I know you have workshops, and I want to get more into detail on those workshops, that schools could utilize? Do you think it's something that may be incorporated into maybe their curriculum? I don't know. But what do you offer as far as the schools specifically are concerned?
That's a great question. So our original programs, these workshops and trainings and activities, are primarily designed for use in schools. It doesn't mean they can't be used by nonprofit organizations with after-school programs or by, they can be used by anyone, but schools, we realized what you said, is that if we want to get kids, most kids are in school, right? And so our workshops are designed, in a dream world, this would be mandated education through health curriculum across the country. Now, of course, mandates are not that popular and they happen on a state by state basis. So that doesn't happen overnight. However, in Florida, the reason we've done so much work in Florida is because Florida does have a mandate that this should be taught in health class. So when we've worked with Duval and we've worked with Broward and Palm Beach, we do trainings of their health teachers, and then the health teachers administer it in the classroom. And those have been incredible partnerships. So all of our tools, we have something on our website. If you go to the Educate place, it says the Education Center. If you go there, anyone can be trained to use any of the tools. And again, as you asked earlier, they're free of charge. So that's really important.
Yeah.
Most of our programs are designed to be run within a one class period timeframe. So that makes it, and that was intentional, so that we can make it easier for schools to use these tools. We also have mapped to many state standards in terms of what they are required to use. So I would encourage any health educator to come online and become part of the One Love community. We have lots of free trainings and resources that you can use to educate your kids. I will say, though, the other place young people live is online.
Yes.
When we started this work, we're like, well, yeah, we should get to the schools. But then how do we flood their social feeds with this same messaging?
And you
how
anticipate do we... excuse my next question.
Oh, I did. There you go.
Well, that's great. That's great. Yeah, because they do. I mean, and not, you know, I hate to interrupt you right here, but folks need to understand that you have to go where the young folks are. They're not going to come to you. And school is one, and online is another. They spend 6 to 7 hours a day online.
I know. And, you know, I think YouTube, like nearly every kid in the world watches a YouTube video, or not in the world, in our country at least, once a day.
Mm-hmm.
So we have really built out our social media strategies in terms of, now Facebook is where most of the grownups are, but Instagram, Snapchat, some of these other platforms. We're looking into TikTok now. We're trying to think how we could develop shorter form content for YouTube that maybe it's just like relationships 101, or how to break up and stay friends, or catchy content that kids will watch and then that will bring them into the funnel of wanting to learn more and do more with One Love. So it's critical to be there. And it's also really important. I mean, we frequently at the beginning, Sharon Love, Yardley's mom, when she finally figured out what she wanted to do, she said, you know, I want to do for this issue what Mothers Against Drunk Driving did for that issue. I want to shift the stigma from the abused to the abuser. And I want to teach bystanders how to do the equivalent of taking away the keys. And as a kid who grew up in that era, it was a really powerful metaphor for me, your powerful comparison. What's different between now and when MAD started is online. If kids like something, if you talk to them in a language they can hear, if they see value in the content you're sharing, they will share it for you. We frequently, with our social media campaigns, one of our favorite measures is it's easy to like something, but when you share something, that's even more powerful thing. Some of our campaigns, there's more shares than likes. So again, being useful to young people, meeting them where they are with content that speaks to them and reflects their authentic story. I mean, we've done a ton of work in the last 3 or 4 years to really become more diverse and inclusive in our content, because while this, we always intended to be for everyone, we realized that too many of the stories that we were telling were really from a white heteronormative lens. And kids could learn, diverse sections of kids could learn from these tools. But as one educator said to us, you know, you're teaching them in their heads, but more authentic stories that reflect their realities will touch them in their hearts too. And that's where the really powerful learning comes. So that has been a process as well, as how do we believe that relationship health is an issue every kid benefits from learning about, every person benefits from learning about. But how do we earn the privilege to educate, you know? And a lot of that is meeting kids where they are with what they need.
And I may add that one's style, one's approach also is very influential. If you approach them in an authoritative manner, because that's important, they're not going to hear you.
100%.
They're
going to
immediately turn you off. Okay? If you are approaching them in a condescending manner, whether it's, you know, written, online, workshop, no matter how it's done, you've lost them before you get started.
100%.
Before you can even get started.
And I would say that one of the things I think we do well is we immediately say, like I say all the time, I do this for a living. This is my day job.
Mm-hmm.
I still do unhealthy things. Like, nobody is perfect here.
Exactly.
Nobody is coming from a place of perfection. We all make mistakes. We all need to continuously improve in this area. And I think kids around issues like abuse or domestic violence or sexual assault are used to being addressed in more of an accusatory or judgmental tone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not productive, as you're saying. What's productive is to say, listen, this is something we're all going to struggle with, you know, and there's no judgment here. But, you know, one of our hashtags we use is we can all love better, hashtag love better. And I think that meeting people without judgment and trying to give, again, I'll come back to this, as long as what we provide is useful to them, as they see the value, it helps them and their friends.
Exactly.
I think we're good. You know, I think that they will continue to share. And we also, I should say, I haven't even really talked about our student leadership programs at One Love all that much. But, you know, we have a ton of student leadership programs where kids are learning to lead with relationship health at their core. And to the showing respect for our young people, one of our student leaders out in the Bay Area became a student leader after she saw our first film, Escalation. But she is from a Latin background, and she and her brother, they're both, you know, late teens, decided they wanted to make their own film that showed it through their context, through their sort of Latinx perspective. They created a film. They told us they were doing it. They created a film, and they came to us and showed it to us, and it was incredible. And we said, can we build a workshop around this? And so now Amor del Bueno is a tool that's being used in classrooms around the country that was created by kids who wanted to teach what we're teaching, but show it through their lens. And I think we really go to young people and say, this is your movement to lead. We want to follow your lead. You know, once you talk for 5 minutes to most kids about this issue, they know they need this in their lives. So how do we teach them and then say, help us do more, help us like change the world together. And that's really a lot of the messaging we bring to the young people we serve.
Well, I saw something about certifications. Now, what type of certification can one receive or an organization or a school receive, or what is available there? What was meant by that?
Well, it's interesting because we started One Love really believing that the way that to tackle this public health issue, we needed to empower non-experts to teach because the numbers are so high. If we rely on somebody being a domestic violence expert or there's not going to be enough social workers. There's not going to be enough therapists to address this problem. So we, as we've gone on, what we've realized is that people want more training. People want to be, these are hard conversations. They can be, because a lot of us have experienced abuse, they can be triggering conversations. So our certification programs, right now, we're doing educator certification programs, which are 6 hours of programming over a 2-day period that where you leave with a certification as a facilitator that's more robust than what we did in the past. Okay. Those have been incredibly popular. And I'll just to give you an example. So the participants in those are primarily teachers and also educators from domestic violence agencies around the country who everybody wants to do prevention, but they're frequently doing so much victim services because of the magnitude of the problem. They don't have the time or budget to invest in great educational tools. So they will come to our training so they can use our tools and then they'll go into local schools, which is awesome for us. We love that. But in the last training we did, there were 400 people who participated. And at the end, we asked them, how many kids do you each plan to reach in the next 6 months with these tools? And out of this last training, the answer was 120,000 young people.
Oh, wow.
So, exactly. So I give you that example to say it's actually not all about One Love at all. We want to be the tool creator and the galvanizer. And then we want to fire up people around the country to go out and take these tools to educate kids. I should also mention we're doing, it's not just about education. Like part of changing the norms around abuse and changing the stats is going to be changing how we talk about this issue, how we engage in this issue, pulling this issue out of the dark and into the light. Again, Sharon Love from the beginning used to say you attract more bees with honey, saying if we don't find a way to make it fun to participate in this issue, people aren't going to sign up. So we are launching this year. Well, it's the second year, but we're doing Move for Love, which is something anyone anywhere can do. It's a digital event that runs in April into May that basically you can track your yards, your miles run, your miles walked, your activities, swimming, your whatever, and dedicate it towards this cause. And this year we're actually doing 2 in-person events in partnership with the Baltimore Ravens in Baltimore on May 15th and in partnership with the Seattle Seahawks on May 21st. Both of those teams have been incredibly supportive of One Love, but they're going to be stadium events where we have their celebrations. They're going to have lots of fun things to do. We're trying to build a community of people who decide this is an issue that they want to be part of, because everyone can teach somebody the 10 signs. You don't need excessive training to introduce your kids or kids you love to the 10 signs.
Well, we're out of time almost, but who are the unsung heroes? Who are you referring to?
Well, the unsung heroes, we have a program because Yardley was a lacrosse player. I actually should mention this. The lacrosse community has been incredibly supportive of One Love. I think this tragedy with 2 lacrosse players involved in this situation, it's a pretty tight knit community. It was really devastating to them. And so from the beginning, even before we decided to focus on prevention, we had this focus on celebrating the good that athletes can do and really lifting up lifting up those in the lacrosse community that are doing good things for other people. Yardley was a really, I didn't know her. I only knew of her, but she was a really good person, not the best player on the team, but like sort of the glue of the team, mm-hmm. you know, and they wanted to celebrate the kids who were the glue. So it's an annual award that's done for division one, two, and three lacrosse players, one male, one female in each division, that recognizes not what they do on the field, but what they're doing to make their community is a better place.
Well, Katie, this has been just fantastic. I appreciate the information you've shared and want to call you back. Is that possible?
I would love it. I appreciate you making space for this. Thank you for having me.
Well, time out. That's it for this edition of 411 Team. Special thanks to Katie Hood, to my listening audience. Much appreciation for your time and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to past episodes at WFSU.org.